Hey everyone, this is John, and this is the Nintendo 64, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. Like the name implies, I'm going to talk about an N64 game. And we do these every so often, every month or so. We talk about retro games as they came out 21 years ago. We are in 1999, so that is mostly N64 stuff. But I'm going to take a look back at one that came out in November of 1998, and that is Knife Edge Nose Gunner. I am solo. Wes and Ryan are not here with me. We will be getting back together in a couple of days here, hopefully to do like an After Dark, more of a general discussion type thing. But I wanted to at least get a retro show in. And usually we play a little bit like the retro games together, or, you know, we kind of divvy out who's going to try to do what. But I'm the only one who's played this game, so it's a lesser known game. So I'm just going to knock something out solo here, and we'll plow forward with another show on another day. Knife Edge Nose Gunner is the game on tap, as I said. This one was released on November 10th of 1998 in North America, and November 27th of 98 in Japan, which is a little bit unusual for a Japanese-developed N64 game. This one was developed by a Japanese company, Kemco, and published, of course, by Kemco as well. And Kemco is not a company we've talked about a whole lot, even though they've been making games since the NES and Famicom days. It's a subsidiary of a big Japanese conglomerate, and this subsidiary was founded in 1984. It did have a subsidiary. My goodness, that's a hard word for me to say tonight. They did have an American subsidiary in the U.S. from 1991 to about 2000, and then again from 2000 to 2007 when they closed up shop. They continued to release games in the U.S. underneath their Japanese label. They don't have an American subsidiary anymore. A lot of companies and subsidiaries and U.S. branches were closing up shop around then. That was right around the time of the Great Recession. Kemco, as a developer and a publisher, most notable series is Top Gear, which has had a bunch of installments across a bunch of different series. They did a lot of license work as well back between 1984 and 2003, Mickey Mouse games, Batman games, Bugs Bunny games, that sort of thing. But after 2003, I mean, that's when a lot of their console kind of emphasized. So they're primarily a console developer to that point. But then after that, they become a mostly mobile game developer and publisher. And a lot of their mobile games, especially their RPGs, get ported over to Nintendo systems. 3DS got a bunch. Switch is getting more. Wii U got a few of them. But primarily, they're developed for mobile platforms. And you can tell with a lot of like their modern or their more contemporary RPGs. These things are quite, let's say, rudimentary or traditional in the way that they are designed and the way that they progress. They don't really make very ambitious RPGs. These are much more smaller, bite-sized, more digestible for like a more casual market type of RPG. Not really an indictment on their quality. I haven't really played a whole lot of them. They seem fine, but they also look like something that was made in like RPG Maker. So as far as Nose Gunner itself is concerned, I could not find any credits for this game. So I'm not sure who worked on it, if they're still making games, if they're still part of Kemco. It's a bit of a mystery, which is not entirely uncommon for games in the 80s and 90s. But once you start getting into the late 90s here, there's a lot more tracking. A lot more credit being given out, and you get a lot more of the auteurs. See, video game developers and publishers become much more recognizable by name. But onto the game itself, Knife Edge Nose Gunner is a rail shooter. It is, of course, on rails. You are moving forward in your little helicopter plane thing automatically. You're using the analog stick to move around your target reticle around the screen. You don't really have control of the actual ship itself. You are the gunner, as the subname implies. You shoot with a semi-automatic Vulcan gun. It fires in 3 or 4 round bursts, so you're not having to tap the button every time you want to shoot. And there's a variety of different specials, homing missiles, bombs. I'm not entirely clear on how these are earned, But once they are like in your bank of weapons, you can fire them off with the A and B button, respectively, depending on which special weapon you have equipped. And there are other sub-weapons as well that you can swap out. Enemy planes and tanks fly or roll onto the screen, and you shoot them down with your gun for scores and upgrades. You can earn upgrades to your Vulcan, your main gun, your Vulcan cannon, and HP restores as well. You don't really take a whole lot of damage from enemy shots, but at the end of each stage, you are scored on how many planes you've shot down, how accurate you were. The accuracy is thankfully pretty forgiving. As long as something is kind of like in the neighborhood of your targeting reticle, you'll most likely score a hit, and it doesn't take a whole lot of hits to down any particular like standard enemy. Each stage does have like a boss fight and a mini boss fight, and they do of course take more damage. And like you would expect in any sort of rail shooter, there are weak points and like sort of a memorization to where they're going to fire and where you should be. So the game even has full four-player co-op for the story-based mission or the single-player missions, and as well as a little deathmatch, which has become pretty standard for the N64 games of the time. It is a short game, only about 6 minutes, six missions, and each of those missions takes about 5 or 6 minutes apiece. It does attempt to achieve some sort of longevity with a scoring system, and the multiplayer, of course. One of the other big things that they try to do to sort of add replay value to the game is they have alternate routes when selecting a mission. So it will show you the different sort of like twists and branches that will occur in each progression of each mission. And you have the option to kind of select all of these different like letter labeled routes. And some of them go as many as like deep into the alphabet, like X, Y kind of. These are how many different alternate routes that you take. However, selecting these alternate routes does not offer enough variety to the routes or to the progression of the game to really make an impact. I'm not sure if when you are playing a cooperative game, if it goes split screen, it can each take alternate routes. That would, I think, get very difficult to, you know, have split screen and have your targeting reticle either be, you know, a small enough part of the screen to where it doesn't like, it doesn't become dominating, or big enough to where it still manages to target things effectively. So I think it's a difficult balance. I wasn't able to get a co-op going, so I'm not entirely sure how that all works. But I think my inclination, if it were me making this game, it would just be you select a route and everyone plays, especially since it's a four-player co-op, which is really cool. They didn't get that many people going with this game. But having that like cut into smaller screens, I think, would be a difficult design choice to pull off. So it doesn't offer enough variety to these routes to really make it discernible what sorts of things are changing depending on what route you're taking. So there's never any reason to replay the game so you can see every single route. So really the player only has agency over where the bullets are going with that targeting reticle, and there are slight shifts to the position of the ship that you use the C buttons to adjust, and it acts as sort of a dodge. And it works effectively enough. Most of the projectiles even can be shot down as they're flying at you. There are some like energy projectiles that you do want to move out of the way. And sometimes there are stage hazards, like little walls and stuff that'll pop up and you want to move out of the way. But other than that, you're not doing any sort of adjustment to the position of the ship. And it does have three difficulty levels if you're trying to squeeze more content out of the game. But that doesn't change a whole lot from the perspective of like how much game you're playing. This game reviewed poorly when it was released by the very few outlets that acknowledged its existence. I could not find this thing in any sort of mention, even like a Nintendo Power. So I believe on November 1998, there were like, I think that was like Ocarina of Time. So this game was definitely overshadowed by a number of other high profile things that were coming out. And, you know, this game probably did not present enough value at the time for a full priced game. Especially when, you know, you have more, like, actual first-person shooters like GoldenEye and Doom that were really in vogue at the time, that there wasn't much room in the enthusiast consciousness for something like a rail shooter. And, you know, it's a shame. It really is a transitional phase in video game because you are moving into that sort of 3D space. So in order for things to feel really next-gen, you are looking for something with a more, I guess, full experience in terms of the depth of your mechanics and the presentational value of all this sort of stuff. Games are taking leaps forward in what they're able to show you and what sorts of things that they want to show you and have you interact with. And this game is much more of an arcade experience, which, as we're progressing more into the modern era on the N64 and afterwards, is going to start feeling more and more like a relic. And this game was also criticized for poor visuals and a rudimentary narrative. But, you know, when you view this game through the lens of time, this is not a subpar addition to the N64 lineup. It's just kind of par. It's not a huge leap forward. It doesn't feel entirely next-gen. There's no save feature, not a huge deal because it's only the 6 missions. There's no presentational leaps like in a Star Fox. You don't really have characters talking to each other mid-mission. And when you look at something like a Star Fox, Nintendo really thought of like how these sort of arcade shooters work. And when you are controlling your ship and that's changing your sort of the area that which you're aiming, you're just kind of like shooting forward in front of the ship. You know, sometimes you're trying to dodge as well as shoot in a particular place. So, you know, if you move, you're going to change where your shots are being fired. Now, in order to solve that, they go with the barrel roll mechanic. So you can deflect shots without having to move, so you can keep firing where you need to fire. And in this game, of course, that's not really an issue because you're not really controlling, aside from the slight shift, you're not controlling the position of your ship at all. You're just controlling where you're shooting. So, you know, again, like, Star Fox is the standout rail shooter on the system. Is the easiest thing to compare it to. Knife Edge does not deserve the same praise that Star Fox gets, but it does not entirely deserve all the criticism that it got either. It's not particularly good looking, but it's not particularly ugly for an N64 game. After playing a bunch of these things, like more than I played, you know, back when the system was contemporary, you know, this is kind of what you expect out of the N64. It's not Mario 64. It's certainly not Ocarina of Time. But, you know, you compare this to some of the fighting games or some of the other first-person shooters that we've talked about in the system. It's fine. Like, it's not... There's nothing super standout about this game. But I don't think that it's fair to malign this game entirely for that. You can grab a used cart on Amazon for this game for about $5. I think that is a totally fair price for this old, somewhat underappreciated, and totally acceptable game. This game, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe that's just kind of like the bias of game reviews. Like, if this game was getting 4s and 5s back in the day, you know, largely considered a bad game. But maybe if, you know, we kind of adjusted the way we expect reviews to work, you know, a 5 out of 10 is just kind of average. So, you know, maybe that is appropriate. The game is just kind of average. So, and of course, not available on any sort of download system, without a doubt. So I do not have my rankings of N64 games, and there's still a number of things that I need to add on to it, such as Mario Party 1, Castlevania 64, I need to find a position. But my rankings for N64 games is on my computer at work. So we won't be getting back to the actual rankings until June at the earliest. With that in mind, all of those games that I mentioned, like Knife Edge, Nose Gunner, and Mario Party 1 and Castlevania 64, these are all kind of okay games, so we're going to have to make some adjustments as one of the mid-range of the rankings. Out of the three of those, Knife Edge most likely going to rank the lowest. So what I did is I reached out to the Discord group, and I did this only a couple hours ago, so not a whole lot of chances to respond just yet. But I reached out to the Discord groups, and I asked which N64 games were reviewed or remembered poorly that you kind of like. And Kevin, first to respond, said Castlevania 64, and the other one that came out, which I think was... I forget the subtitle of that one, but I know the one you're talking about, Kevin. Basically the same game with extra stuff, as Kevin puts it. And yeah, you know, that game also didn't review particularly well, but I admire what they did with Castlevania 64, with the sort of ambition of making a 3D action game in the vein of Castlevania. They did a good job of making it sort of maintain the spirit of games like Castlevania 1, 2, 3 and Super Castlevania 4. Some of the platforming, a little bit finicky, but, you know, a lot like I've been saying about Knife Edge, it's a game that I was expecting to not be very good. I was expecting to be a train wreck, and it is not. It's a game that's totally acceptable, and, you know, the criticism that Castlevania 64, some of it is merited, but I don't think it's all that bad of a game. Jason Lee responds with Donkey Kong 64, although it rated highly at the time, and now people rag on it. But you know what, Jason Lee, yeah, you are correct. It's a game that reviewed well at the time. It is not a game that I have played just yet, but it kind of, like, turned around where, you know, it reviewed highly. Some of the probably had to do with some of the pedigree with Rare making these 3D games, and even at the time, it was kind of like a yes and kind of game. Like this is Rare like making another one of these 3D platformers, and they're packing even more stuff into it. I don't know if that was entirely a criticism at the time, but now like the main criticisms around the game, as it's kind of ebbed and flowed here, is that they were asking, like, they had too much in there, and they're asking the player to do too much with, you know, re-entering levels as different characters and having like all of these collectibles packed in there. But, you know, I think it's starting to turn around. I think you're starting to see it in a sort of ebb again, where the general consensus is more positive on Donkey Kong 64. And, you know, some of that has to do with, you know, things sort of regressing to the mean, where, you know, a lot of games, especially these high-profile games from high-profile developers, will have this backlash as they get older. And it happens a lot quicker now. But it has this backlash as it gets older, like, okay, it's not really that good. And then as time goes on, that opinion becomes less in vogue, and you have the sort of like settling in the middle where, you know, the general consensus is like, yeah, it's pretty good. And you're seeing it with a lot of N64 games. Like, I think that one of the first ones to happen was like Ocarina of Time, which is of course ridiculous. And you saw it with Yoshi's Story, and you see it with Donkey Kong 64. Yoshi's Story, maybe a bad example, because that wasn't a game that was particularly well reviewed at the time. It was fine. But, you know, you're seeing a lot of nostalgia come up for that game, and people talking about, you know, playing it the right way and finding all the fruit and unlocking all these different levels. And so there's sort of the hidden depth of that game. And you see it with Donkey Kong 64, where, you know, well-received at the time, sort of a frustration with it as it got older, and now you're kind of seeing it, like, turn back around, and you're seeing more people's like, hey, you know, it of course, is a huge collect-a-thon, but I had fun with it. So, as time goes on, I'm sure it'll be more fondly remembered, and you'll be proven right on that one. Spoony Tech says, Banjo, comparing it to the DK64, saying it's not as good, but still very good. And, you know, Spoony Tech, I think that was a game that was also really well received at the time. So, I don't know. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who says that Banjo-Kazooie was a bad game. I played it, talked about it on the show, and I thought it was also a good game. So, that's going to bring my short little retro show here to a close. Me and Ryan and Wes should be back in a couple of days with a nice After Dark. And we'll get into some discussions about, you know, whatever the fuck we feel like. And we will wrap it all up at the end of the month with the official show. We'll have some news and game announcements to go through, as well as a number of new releases that are coming out right at the end of the month here that I am picking up. we'll certainly be talking about, for me personally, I'll be talking about ETA. That's a bullet hell game that looks a lot like Hyper Light Drifter. I'll be picking that one up in a couple of days here. Trials of Mana is definitely a must-buy. And then we got a release date for Streets of Rage 4. That was out on the 30th. I don't know if we'll be talking about that one, because it might not be out when we record, but that will certainly be one that pops up on the mini show. I am super pumped for that one. So, until next time, everybody.